If you have a broken guitar, don't fret. Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson to Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We'll have you fretting your guitar in no time at all. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, we love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast. It's SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at the United Steelworkers. Joining me now, State Representative Corey Mason. He, of course, is a Democrat from Racine. He had to sit through Governor Walker's budget address yesterday. My condolences, Corey.
Thanks, Sly.
How many of those have you had to sit through, huh?
This is actually my sixth budget address that I've sat through, the now fourth from Governor Walker. So.
Okay. Can we start on, I know, you know, the budget and school funding is always the top line to most
right.
of the TV and radio stations, but I have to talk to you about this continued attack on organized labor and the workers
yeah.
of Wisconsin.
Absolutely. But before we do that, too, I mean, I don't want to, like, here's the thing. I mean, everyone said, oh, it's great. He's putting money into the UW and the K-12 and the tech colleges. But, I mean, we're nowhere near back to where we were when he started, right? I mean, he's made the biggest cuts to the things that educate our workforce and get people to the middle class than I think arguably anybody in Wisconsin history. So it's as though, you know, an arsonist started a fire and then came back a few minutes later and said, hey, I'm here to put out the fire. Aren't I a hero? Right? So, I mean, I think...
Representative Mason, you owe an apology to arsonists. Please.
I mean, it's, so I just think before people get too excited about, you know, some of the things that he's trying to do here, we don't even begin to undo all the damage that he's done, and he's still putting us down a path that's structurally and fiscally unsustainable. So before people just get too excited about the top line, then we move on to these other horrible things that he's going to continue to do to workers on workers' comp and unemployment insurance and project labor agreements and prevailing wage and all these things. Big picture, people should remember he's just now starting to fix the huge mess he's made of the Wisconsin economy.
All right. Well, let's start out with what he's doing to workers, because we like to focus on those issues on this show.
Yeah.
Prevailing wage, right? They're going to try to get more roads built on the back of workers and continue to attack people getting paid decent wages in Wisconsin. I know what's going to happen. I'm sure you know what's going to happen. They're going to, you know, out-of-state workers are going to come to Wisconsin on very low wages, and we're not only going to punish workers, we're going to punish some of the good, responsible road builders in this state.
Yeah, you've got, and beyond that, I mean, you know, all the studies that are out there, the federal government tracks, is actually cheaper to build highways. They last longer and they come in under cost when you use well-trained workers who know what the heck they're doing. So it's actually cheaper per mile for taxpayers to actually hire people who know what they're doing. I know it seems counterintuitive to some of the Republicans. They can hardly believe it, but that does remain true. So this is a bad deal for Wisconsin workers who've worked hard to get into the minimum wage and be trained to do some backbreaking work on behalf of our infrastructure. And it's, you know, for a guy who's close to the border in Racine like I am, it means that I'm going to have more Melanesians coming up to take this work and undercut some of the work that people in my community really rely on to get into the middle class. And it's just this continued assault. I mean, it's like they can't even help themselves until there's nothing left to protect workers from being in the middle class or, you know, dealing with their unemployment insurance or their workers' comp. They get hurt on the job. It just continues.
It wasn't all that long ago in the divide and conquer strategy that Scott Walker was touting his relationship with some of the very unions right now that he is stabbing so deeply in the back.
Yes. I mean, some of the building trades made a Faustian bargain with Scott Walker, and they are burning for it, I think. I think the hope was is that they could just do some sort of transactional approach with this governor and stop him from moving forward on right to work or prevailing wage repeals or any of these things that he claimed he wasn't going to do when he was going after public workers during the Act 10 chapter. And as soon as he, you know, sort of disposed of public employees and their workers' rights, he moved on to the private sector ones and is going at them with as much gusto as he did with public employees.
You know, we saw this exact movie in Indiana with Governor Mitch Daniels and Mike Pence, right? And I suspect we're going to see the same movie at the federal level with Donald Trump bringing in some of these very unions making promises. And then, you know, a week later, we hear that Paul Ryan and the Republicans want to introduce national right to work. You know, how many times can people be fooled?
No, I get that the laborers and some of the other trades really want to build the pipelines and that's important to them. But as they're getting all animated about one or two big projects, they're keeping their eye off the ball and they're going to lose the very structures that put them into the middle class in the first place if they don't pay attention.
Can you explain what these project labor agreements are? And this is another attack on labor. What that will do?
Yeah, so, I mean, what it basically says is a private developer or a municipality, when they do a development, can say, you know what, to make sure that the project comes in on time and on budget, that we've got skilled workers we need, we're going to make an agreement with the local unions that do this kind of work, what are referred to as the building trade people, right? And so the building trades agreed to provide a skilled workforce because the building trades actually train all these workers on their own dime, make sure they've got the skilled workers they need, and then they can agree with the unions that they want to put a preference on hiring veterans or making sure that they hire local or making sure that that they're using as many locally sourced materials. Those are the kind of things that you put into these project labor agreements, and in return, the unions agree to keep the project on task. They become partners in completing it and agree not to walk off the job or strike or do any of those other things during the term of the project. So it's been a labor management peace approach that has also really benefited taxpayers because the work gets done on time and sometimes even early and on budget because you're hiring contractors and workers who know what they're doing.
Well, there would be no new arena for the Milwaukee Bucks and Marquette Golden Eagles if we didn't have project labor agreements because
that's
Republicans
right.
didn't have enough votes to pass and the Milwaukee Bucks and organized labor came up with, and thanks to the hard work of people like Peter Rickman, came up with some really unique ways for that stadium to actually help people that need work in the city of Milwaukee.
Well, and to that project's credit, not only for the people who will build the stadium, but also for the people who will work there when it's built.
Right.
It's a model community development agreement that we'd like to see more of. And I think now that Republicans have sort of figured out what an agreement like that could look like, they are doing everything in their power to make sure nothing like that could ever happen again. And that's really a disservice to the middle class who work hard. And to the taxpayers who pay for these projects, who I think if you ask most taxpayers, so, hey, do we want to pay people in our neighborhood poverty wages to do this work, or should they be in the middle class and have some decent benefits? Most people would say I think, you know, as an employer, the municipality that I work at, the city, the school district, wherever, should be able to put in some decent wages for people.
So when you run for governor next year, is this going to be part of your platform?
I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think...
Why don't we have one of you that are articulate and smart run for governor? I mean, you're very good at this. So, you know, I keep hearing that the Democrats don't have a bench. You're really good at this. State Representative Gordon Hinds is terrific at
Gordon's
this.
Yeah, Gordon's great.
Yeah.
I mean, look, here's the reality, and this is the end result of things like Citizens United taking hold. So now the question becomes, if you want to run statewide, would you be good at this and can you talk about this and do you have a vision that's positive for the state of Wisconsin? The first question you have to answer is, well, how are you going to raise $25 billion? That's the new reality.
How are you going to raise how much?
$25
billion. Who?
Right? So you who serve in the state assembly, don't even know how to begin to answer that question.
Right.
Right? So I think that the era that we've seen, and Scott Walker might be at the end of it, of people who come from the state legislature or from locally elected mayors or county executives running for governor and Congress and being successful at that are going to be few and far between. So you either have to be wealthy enough on your own, like the, you know, everybody's waiting for the next Herb Kohl to emerge, or you have to be willing to, you know, basically capitulate to all kinds of big special interests, like, you know, Scott Walker has with the Koch brothers and the Bradley Foundation and all these other people who, you know, Diane Hendricks and all these other people who bankroll his campaign. So it's a tough question, and it really makes it hard to see how our democracy is going to flourish when it's all dependent on not a question of who's got the best ideas for the state of Wisconsin or moving the country forward, but rather who knows the most millionaires and billionaires to get them in office.
State Representative Corey Mason with us at sliesoffice.com. We're talking about the governor's budget address yesterday. Let me play a little bit of the coverage from WKOW.
Governor Walker wants to provide a big income tax cut in this budget.
Overall, income taxes on a typical family will go down by more than $130 in this budget.
He also wants to put more than $500,000 new dollars towards public schools.
Just in case any of you missed that, let me repeat that. We are investing more money into public education than ever before.
This budget actually takes a lot of what I put in the budget to meet those needs.
Republican lawmakers like the concept of both proposals.
A lot of things I think we can get behind. They may not be at the exact same spending level as what he's proposed, but I do believe a lot of things we're going to be supportive of.
But a number of other items in this budget proposal already seem dead on arrival in the Republican legislature, including one that would have the state insure its own employees for health care rather than allowing them to pick from a number of private insurance plans.
I think an awful lot of people are doubtful about the real long-term savings, and the concern that I have just as a private sector person is I don't want to do something that disrupts the market.
And a tuition cut for UW system students paid out of the state coffers also doesn't sit well.
We have cut tuition already by freezing it for 4 years in a row. I am not hearing a great deal of support for a 5% cut, but that'll be something we can debate.
That debate will now be held over the next several months in the legislature's Joint Committee on Finance. Greg Newman, 27 News.
All right. So first of all, let's talk about the education funding. Put this in a perspective. How much are we still behind the eight ball? And what do you think about what Scott Walker said about Madison Public Schools?
Yeah, I mean, I think two things. I mean, I think this is a governor that's reduced funding for education between K-12 and higher education by more than $1 billion, right? And a bit further north of that. I don't know what the exact number is, but it's a big number, right? So now he's talking about, you know, well, now I'll put back, you know, $200 million in the first year, maybe another $300 or $400 in the. So he's starting to undo the damage he has done, but we're not anywhere near where we were when we started, and we're still further behind because of it. So, you know, so that's a real structural problem. The other big structural problem that he has, you know, he talks about what the typical income tax break will be for the typical family, but what he doesn't tell you is most of the money for these income tax breaks go to people that are much, they get a disproportionate share of these tax breaks, right? So it's basically a redistribution from our schools and our universities and other things to pay for these big tax breaks that he's done in the past and that he wants to do more of. And so when people say, well, why don't we have more money for schools or for healthcare or for some of these other things, it's because we've given away billions of dollars in tax breaks that largely benefit big businesses and the wealthy under this sort of, you know, everybody's waiting for Ronald Reagan's trickle-down economics to work, but it never actually does. So that's sort of where he is. And then, you know, going after Madison and you know, Milwaukee and other Democratic cities that are still trying to be progressive and forward-thinking about their education and their governance is going to continue to be a target of this governor, whether it's doing labor agreements to make sure that people working for a municipality on big projects get paid decently, or making sure that you treat your employees with some respect. They're going to come after that.
Well, I have a question for you. Isn't it in our state constitution that we treat all Wisconsin school children fairly and equitably? I mean, it seems to me that the governor is singling out the blue parts of the state, the children, because he doesn't like the decisions made by local school boards.
Right, right. I mean, there is, I mean, as much as Republicans love to sort of wave the Constitution around at both the state and federal level, I would encourage them to actually read the state constitution, where it requires us, doesn't suggest, doesn't lay down as a goal, but it requires us to adequately educate every child in the state of Wisconsin. It also, by the way, prohibits money going to private schools, and somehow they've managed to circumvent that in the Constitution. But it does say we have to adequately educate every child, and we are not living up to that standard. And in no small part, these huge cuts that Scott Walker has made. So again, back to the argument, I mean, this is a fire that he started when he took office to have huge cuts in funding. And so as we've sort of watched the structure of education burn for the last years, he's coming back with a hose and saying, okay, I'm here to help, right? And so, you know, it's good that he wants to finally start to undo all the damage that he's done. But, you know, it's just sort of the audacity of coming back and taking credit for cleaning up a mess that you made is pretty remarkable.
Well, I heard an ad the other day. I was listening to the Rush Limbaugh show, so you don't have to.
Thank you.
It's okay. It's the price I pay for my job. And right during one of the commercial breaks was a local commercial paid for by the taxpayers of Wisconsin advertising school choice for parents to put their kids in these voucher schools. And I'm thinking to myself, why am I spending my tax dollars to advertise for parents to take their kids out of public schools?
It's a great question. I mean, both Racine and Milwaukee, which are sort of ground zero for these disastrous experiments, promised, especially Milwaukee decades ago, you wait, once we start funding these private schools, they'll compete, and it'll raise the tide on all boats. But what you really continue to have is an ongoing scheme of unaccountable but taxpayer-funded private voucher schools that are taking money away from public schools that are then unable to do what the Constitution requires us to do, which is adequately educate every child. So, you know, look, if people want to send their kids to private schools, God bless them. That's great. But I don't think taxpayers should be on the hook when we're not even funding the one public school system that we have adequately. Why on earth would you want to duplicate government and start funding two of them?
I'm just looking at some of the things in this budget. The requirement that teachers regularly renew their licenses would end. Instead, they would get a permanent license. They would still undergo background checks. Currently, DPI conducts those checks as part of the renewal process. Well, that doesn't seem like a very good idea. And there's another one here, the exemption for energy efficiency projects in school revenue limits enacted under Governor Doyle would end. Walker's office said districts obtained authorization to spend $327 million above revenue caps in 2016 alone because of the exemption. But think how much money that saves districts and how good that is for the environment to...
And the jobs that it creates.
Right.
We retrofit those schools. Yes. Yes. So, yes, I mean, as a state, we are more opposed to putting clean energy jobs on the ground than just about any other state. I mean, you can go to Iowa, and Republicans have invested heavily in wind. You can go to Michigan, and they're doing wind and solar in a big way. I mean, it's not just a Republican versus a Democratic thing. This is this governor, in particular, seemingly to have a real desire to limit the ability to move us to renewable energy in as many ways as possible.
Let me ask you about the roads in this project. And what you think's going on there. You've got to be at least somewhat happy that Speaker Voss is challenging the governor a little bit on roads and they're not all walking in lockstep anymore.
I'm pleased he is talking about it, but talk is cheap, right? And at the end of the day, I'm anxious to see if they're actually going to do anything real to get us out of this rut that we're in, where we're putting a lot of our road projects on the credit card instead of adequately funding it as we move forward. I mean, I think that's going to be a tough fight. And look, I mean, you know, and for people who are fiscally conservative, say, well, I don't want to pay more for it. The reality is we've so neglected our infrastructure, it's going to cost more in the long run to maintain them and do the repairs because we don't have a sustainable funding source for stuff. And, you know, roads matter. I mean, it's not just, you know, for people to move around the state for their leisure. This is how we move goods and commerce and move people around and get our products to market. This stuff is not insignificant. And so I know some of the Republicans have this this challenge where they have sworn to outside, out-of-state, you know, ideological groups that they'll never raise any money for anything, ever. But then what happens when your roads and your schools and other things start to deteriorate? You know, businesses and individuals start to look elsewhere for opportunities of where they want to go and decide to live in places that actually invest in their infrastructure.
What is your feeling about the priorities the governor set down for which projects are going to go forward?
Well, I mean, I'm particularly frustrated because the project he seems least interested in funding is the one that goes right by my district, the Racine-Kenosha north-south corridor of I-94. You know, I mean, we've spent billions doing the Marquette interchange out of Milwaukee. They're spending billions outside of Wisconsin. And he said, look, except for the projects in southeast Wisconsin, we're right on project. Well, you know, the biggest projects we have in this state are in southeast Wisconsin because that's where almost all the traffic in the state is going to pass through Metro Milwaukee at some point or another. So you know, it's a bit disingenuous for him to say that, and it's really frustrating for someone like me who represents the Racine community who'd like to see the benefit of those jobs sort of slow walk over the course of many more years to get the project done, you know, because of the governor's backwards priorities. I mean, it's a real frustration. And it also means like years of more construction that people get frustrated about in the Racine-Kenosha area waiting for these projects to finish.
Well, I'm also a little confused because, you know, I remember having a conversation with your colleague from Milwaukee, Danny Reamer, who was talking about Walker kind of doing this two-step where he's saying one thing to the federal government requesting project money for Milwaukee's I-94 by Miller Park, and now I guess he's ended that project again. I never know what, you know, it seems like these things are done on a whim. I never quite am able to follow where Walker's got a plan, a real plan that he can lay out and stick to. We've been all over the place the last couple of years.
Yeah, especially when it comes to transportation infrastructure stuff, right? I mean, he's, you know, he didn't want the rail money, then he would take it for roads. But then he decided he didn't want any money from the federal government because taking federal money is bad. And then he decided he likes the money to help to pay with the exchange, the interchange in Milwaukee, but now he doesn't. And look, I mean, this is the problem when you have a failure of leadership is the guy doesn't have a vision on how to maintain our transportation infrastructure. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that former Secretary Gottlieb quit out of frustration of this governor's inability to lead on a key component of the Wisconsin economy.
Well, everything I heard from people was that was actually one of his better cabinet picks because Gottlieb had a background in engineering and transportation.
Well, and Gottlieb laid out a menu of choices for the governor and said, look, I'm not saying there's only one way to do this, but here's a menu. You pick the way forward that you want to go. We can do this quickly, we can do it slowly, we can do it medium speed, but we've got to find a way to adequately invest in our infrastructure. We've got to come up with something. And Secretary Gottlieb was rebuffed, and I think it's no coincidence that he left that office shortly thereafter.
The Republican ideology on taxes is so dogmatic that it's kind of hard to get anything done, isn't it?
It is, and again, it's also just, I mean, look, I think we want to have transparency and real oversight to make sure that people are getting good investment with their tax dollars, and I don't think we should, you know, tax people needlessly, right? And I think working class people pay more than their fair share of taxes. But what you wind up doing with these Republicans is they always seem to be able to find billions of dollars to give tax breaks that favor the rich or big corporations.
Yeah, there's 12 or 13 people getting that manufacturer's credit right now.
Right.
And I don't see them producing a commensurate number of jobs to go with it.
That's right. So instead of means testing it based on jobs or showing that it actually brings people here into the state and brings working, family-supporting wages into the state, we don't do any of that. We just say, well, we're going to give billions of dollars away to the big manufacturers, and we hope that works out. And then, I mean, it was an interesting moment at my local chamber meeting last month when, you know, they spent an hour to 45 minutes gnashing their teeth about how awful it is that we're not funding our transportation infrastructure. And then when we opened up the questions, the first question was, so you guys are going to leave that big exemption alone so that manufacturers don't have to pay taxes anymore, right? And I was just like, well, look, guys, you know, this stuff doesn't get funded magically, right? I mean, everybody should pay their fair share of funding our infrastructure if we want to have the kind of state that succeeds and allows manufacturers to have decent roads to get their goods to market.
All right, you're not going to go along with this because you're married to a judge now. But I'm going to suggest that Colorado and states that have legalized marijuana have come up with a revenue stream that would be quite helpful in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a panacea, right? I mean, I mean, people who talk about, you know, like as though like they have the best schools in the world in Colorado because of legalized marijuana. I mean, I think that can be an overstatement. But look, at the very least, we could and should start talking about the length of penalties that we give to people for smoking marijuana, and frankly, the amount of jobs that people are prohibited from entering into if they test positive for marijuana, right? I mean, it's just, you know, we make it very difficult for people who had recreational use of marijuana and spend a lot of money in our criminal justice system trying to enforce these laws that, by and large, a lot of the public have rejected.
Yeah, really. Right? And oftentimes it's not their first bust. It's once they go on probation and test positive again that the system really nails them.
That's right. That's right. So you know, we've got a drug that lots of people use recreationally, and our best efforts to criminalize it as a way to stop it have for decades failed. So at the very least, we should start looking at, look, does this really make sense to criminalize marijuana use to the level that we are? Incarcerating somebody costs somewhere between 30, 40 grand a year because somebody's smoking pot. I mean, is that really where we want to be? Or are we better off, at least decriminalizing it, maybe making it a lesser fine?
Listen, I would be frightened to even ask rhetorical questions like that to some of your colleagues because they're living in a different century than I am. State Representative Corey Mason, thank you for joining us today at slysoffice.com. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Sly.
All right, this is Sly. Slysoffice.com brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Slysoffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.